ITL Fantasy Podcast Network presents In a World of Football Podcasts That Sounds Like This.
Welcome into our podcast on Suck Talk Radio.
And talk like this.
Wah, 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 wah. Don't draft the running back, wah, wah.
Because they're not.
So much fun!
Bogman, let's not overreact here.
The In This League Fantasy Football Podcast. Featuring Bogman.
He's f***ing terrible. I don't understand.
Who cares?
This is some psychopath.
Basie got hit in last night.
Hey.
And the Welsh.
Christ, I don't have an answer for this, Bogman. I think I'm going to go.
Pick one.
Spit it out.
Burn it to the ground.
Playing on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and TuneIn. Coming to your ears.
Welcome in, everybody. It's the In This League Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Bogman, and you can follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports. Please check out the Patreon, patreon.com/ITL Army, where we got all kinds of great stuff for you. Group me rooms. I just posted my rankings and all that good stuff. And I had a couple of trip ups when I'm doing my rankings. And to talk about that, I brought in one of my favorite people in the industry right here, Andrew Erickson. You can follow him on the Twitter at Andrew Erickson _. And, you know, it's that time of year, man. We're here. We're post-draft. It's time to get full into gear for rankings. You're doing Fantasy Pros. What else? Is it everything is on Fantasy Pros now because you're full-time?
Yes, everything is on Fantasy Pros. I'm glad you had me on. Bringing in the big guns to talk
right
about these rankings debates. And I'm not just talking about my biases. My big mind is going to help us out here. So yeah, no, everything's over on Fantasy Pros. I do also post some videos on TikTok, the same username at Andrew Erickson _. Same thing with Instagram and things like that. But yeah, no, everything's on Fantasy Pros. And you're so right. Where you're looking at, okay, the draft's in the books. It's like now every roster up to, you know, is set. Now, again, we have a couple of free agents that are kind of, you know, just kind of swimming around, like
Jarvis Landry,
like
a couple
like,
of those guys.
I like look at Will Fuller in my rankings. I'm just like, man, like
just sign somewhere so you can miss 10 games.
Yes.
We all know it's gonna happen. So
yeah,
just
like
it.
Sign somewhere so I can like update projections, update my rankings so I know what team you're on. But alas, we'll see. I think that will actually get some free agent movement probably after June 1st, because that's when there
are cap cut date.
Yeah, the cap cut and things like that. So I do think that we're going to see some movement with these free agents, especially it seems like the Packers are kind of that hot spot where, you know, they've done a lot of work on Landry, on Odell Beckham, on Julio Jones. So, and they were interested in Will Fuller, I think last year before the trade deadline or 2 years ago before the trade deadline. So I think Green Bay is probably going to land at least one of these guys, and that's obviously a good landing spot for fantasy.
Baltimore needs one, too. You know, I love Devin Duvernay. Hook him. I'm a Texas guy, all that good stuff, but I don't think Devin Duvernay is the answer. Maybe Rashad Bateman is, but we will see, of course. But let's start. We're going to go position by position here. I'm going to ask you about a couple guys, and we're going to burn through a couple maybe debates, or like in the rookie wide receivers. I think pretty much all the rookie wide receivers are ranked low, so we're just going to talk about them as a group. But let's start at quarterback. The hardest quarterback that I rank right now is Deshaun Watson, and it's because I think the dude is going to get a suspension. I mean, Roger Goodell is somewhat arbitrary about this. Seems like it's 6 games. It could be the restricted list. I don't know. I know it's a civil case now, so it's different, but there have been rumblings of potentially new accusations coming out for him. You know, everyone is pissed that he went to Cleveland and they gave him the $39 million signing bonus and the $1 million roster bonus, which might not actually even matter because it could be next year when he gets suspended. I know the Vegas odds just came out and the Browns are now the favorite to win the division. So maybe I should move Watson up. I can't do it because I don't believe in my heart of hearts that he's going to play for the full season. So are you ranking him like just normal until we hear a suspension? Are you lowering him? What are you doing with Deshaun Watson right now?
So I have him right now at QB 14. So pretty much in
I'm
line with like with his like, basically I'm fine with like drafting him in where he's going in like best ball drafts. Like, cause I get the play, I get the upside and I get that, you know, that there is a possibility he doesn't get suspended at all. And then he's going to be a 6th round pick. And then at that point, I'm like, oh, well, I'm glad I got exposure to him when he was going outside the top 100, because now he's a guy that I don't need to draft anymore. I got the value where it was good. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. So the Browns are the Vegas favorite now to win the division. Like, that's pretty eye-opening to me.
It was Baltimore in January. And now after this trade, I guess Cleveland has moved up. And the big thing, you know, because I'm a Steelers fan, so I follow all the Steelers, like Instagrams and all those. The Jaguars have better odds to win their division than the Steelers do, which is funny. But I mean, that division's more open than the North. The North is one of the best divisions in football. So, I mean, Steelers were just in the playoffs. And now, you know, they're apparently lower odds to win without Ben Roethlisberger, which doesn't make sense to me, but that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, I mean, so that's kind of what got me really thinking about this is I do my rankings. I finish them. I posted them on Monday. I see on Tuesday and Wednesday that the Browns are the favorites. So I'm like, well, you know, Vegas usually knows something.
And yeah. I think that that's kind of telling. But then the other thing too, so, you know, with the schedule release coming out, you know, the Cleveland Browns, it's almost so obvious that the Browns' first couple games of the season are so easy. Like it's weird that it's such a soft schedule to start the year that it's almost like they're expecting him to get suspended in the beginning of the season, but it's a bunch of really bad matchups. So Jacoby Brissett, like coming in as a backup, like they can still win those games. So maybe
don't rule out Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield roster. Coming in. So and I guess maybe that's the thing too that I'm not really considering. Like in the back of my mind, I'm like, all right, Deshaun Watson's suspended, then okay, there's no quarterback. Oh wait, no. What if Baker Mayfield is playing quarterback now? Or so that's something I've kind of like not really even thought about a process. Yeah. Like I just assume that he's like not on the team, but like he's.
I assume he's a starter in Seattle week one. Like yeah. He'll be cut, you know, at some point Seattle will sign him because they don't want to trade for him. And that'll be that, but who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
But again, if I was, you know, again, like in best ball drafts, like I'm going to side with the fact that he's going to be suspended either not right away. It's going to be delayed. It's going to be next year, or it's not going to be as lengthy as we expect. Like we expect the NFL to come down on these types of players with these types of accusations, but they don't. They really don't. Yeah. And they want to have their at the end of the day, they want the best players on the field. And that's Deshaun Watson. Like that's right. What they care about. That's what the owners care about. That's all the NFL cares about. And so I that's why I side with trying to be above ADP on Deshaun Watson. That's kind of how I'm just kind of gauging. It's like, all right, I don't need to rank him as a top 7 quarterback right now. But as long as I'm telling, you know, people that follow my rankings, like, hey, in a best ball draft, you know, it's pick 100. Deshaun Watson is there. I'd say take a shot on him. Yeah. I say take a shot. So that's the way I'm at least approaching it.
How about Dart throwing on some lower quarterbacks? Are just in these three just kind of stuck out in my mind. Are you buying in on any of these, like a super flex guy, you know, or maybe you're in the 2 QB and you want a third QB? Zach Wilson, Kenny Pickett, Marcus Mariota. Are you buying in on any of these guys or are they ranked all fairly low?
All ranked pretty low for me in a one quarterback league. I'm probably staying away from all of them. I don't think I could touch really any of these guys. I mean, the Jets have a really tough schedule and we talked about this on the Fantasy Pros podcast. Derek Brown pointed out that if you just look at their schedule, it really calls for them to just run the ball a lot. Like that's like how they'll actually like be competitive in games. And you're looking up and you're trying to find like a soft stretch of games where Zach Wilson plays like, oh, he's playing the Falcons. He's playing the Seahawks, like a bunch of really bad secondaries. And he doesn't have that ever. Like there is no stretch of games where you're seeing the Jets like have an opening where you could really see the passing game like really taking off. So I'm like, okay, like then I don't want Zach Wilson, especially because they have them 3 new tight ends, they drafted a running back. So if they're going to be competitive, it's probably because they're running the football. So I'm going to be investing in Breece Hall and just praying to the Lord that Garrett Wilson / Elijah Moore, their talent wins out. Like that's what I'm hoping. I'm not really confident with Zach Wilson. Kenny Pickett, I like in two quarterback leagues because he's cheaper than Zach Wilson and he's going to start all the games. Like I don't think that Trubisky is going to start. And even the way that things are set up, Pittsburgh has a really tough schedule to start the year. So even if Trubisky, you know, is this quote unquote starter, all right, well, they're going to pull the plug on that probably pretty quickly. Be like, all right, well, we know Kenny Pickett can play right away. And they even talked about that after they drafted him. Like, why would they say that if he wasn't in their minds?
You spend a first-round pick on a guy and you have an open spot, you want him to win it. So even if it's close between him and Trubisky, he's going to win and learn on the job. You know, good luck, kid. Go out and face the AFC champions in week one. So on the road, by the way, here you go. So have a great time. I'm looking for, I kind of want Trubisky to win the job because I still believe in Trubisky. I don't think he got a really fair shake in Chicago, but now it doesn't look like he's probably going to get a fair shake in Pittsburgh, and them's the breaks when you didn't make it in your first spot, you know. But how about some player debates real quick? Derek Carr versus Justin Fields.
It's funny, when I first saw this, I'm like, oh, like it's obviously Justin Fields. Like, why would this even be consideration? You know, Fields has the Konami code, the rushing upside. And then when you look at Carr's situation, and I kind of look back to some of the research I did on him when, you know, Devontae Adams first landed there, it's like, you know, Derek Carr is that pocket passing quarterback that looks like he's going to have the outlier touchdown season. Like, that's what you're looking for with these pocket passers. Like, who's the guy that's going to throw like 35 touchdowns, 40 touchdowns? And Derek Carr kind of fits the mold of that category. Again, you know, his 23 passing touchdowns last year were 7 below expectation. He was like really bad in the red zone. You know, Darren Waller and him were not connecting. 3.7.
Well, Waller was hurt for a big chunk of the year too. And you get him back and add Devontae too.
You get him back. You get add Devontae Adams, who is arguably the best red zone touchdown maker in the all of the NFL. His Carr's touchdown rate last year was 3.7%, which was below his career average. So just like natural regression should assume that he gets back up there. So yeah, I was looking more at Carr and I was like, man, like from like a safety perspective, I think that Derek Carr is way safer than Fields, who obviously has a very wide range of outcomes where you're just hoping and praying that he continues to rush. It was last six games, he had averaged 56 rushing yards per game, 21.7 fantasy points per game. But there's no like ignoring the fact that the dude has literally no weapons, no offensive line. And if he's running around, like he's more susceptible to get hurt and get banged up like he did last year. So I think that in a two quarterback league, I think Carr would probably be the guy I would probably gravitate towards more because of the safety. And I think that there is some untapped potential where with Fields, I'll take a shot in one quarterback league on the rushing. It's like, you know, I can figure it out. I can find, you know, a Derek Carr, you know, a sub Derek Carr type of guy to like pick up and stream. Whereas with Fields, if he does end up like hitting and becoming this like dynamic rushing guy, even like a Jalen Hurts player where it's like, it's not pretty, don't watch the games, it's bad, but oh, every single week, Justin Fields is a top 12 quarterback. I think that's what I would probably settle on. And that's something I always try to do. I really approach the quarterback position very differently in terms of rankings with Superflex and one quarterback, because you can be riskier in one QB leagues, I think, because you have the waiver wire to use as I got to fill in. Whereas Fields, like you're not going to find
a guy
like
Fields. 12 man, you know, so, you know, 12 starters, who's rostering backups, maybe six, maybe half the league, you know, on a week to week basis. So 18 are gone. So you have 19 through 32 on your wire at any point. And at that point, you just play matchup. So I'm absolutely with you in terms of being different in super flex. But I also like to call, and the reason I ask you these, because I have Carr one spot ahead of Fields, and I keep going,
right.
It doesn't feel right.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't feel right. Because I think Fields is so much better and he has way more upside in terms of fantasy. But like you said, no receivers, offensive line is bad. You know, they're clearly tanking. And this new coaching staff, they're not the people that drafted Justin Fields. So they're not, you know, beholden to him and all that good stuff. So it's just, I don't know. There's a lot going on there. Trey Lance versus Trevor Lawrence.
For me, I'm going to go with Trey Lance. Again, I'm just latching on to the rushing upside, and I know right now, like, the rumors are that he is sucking in OTAs and Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be on the team. And I just don't believe that. I really think that, I mean, we learned our lesson last year. Believing in these 49ers beat reports does not help you whatsoever. Like, we're getting nothing.
Week one, here comes Elijah Mitchell as the number one running back. And Trey Sermon wasn't even active, was he?
Yeah, Trey Sermon was in the doghouse, like, all training camp, and no one told us anything. And we have to find out week one. So for me, I mean, look, you just got to look at the surrounding factors. Like, they traded up for Trey Lance. He's still super raw. So of course it's not always going to look perfect, but I mean, the more that I think about this, you know, fading players because of bad OTA reports, I just think about how good they end up being. And right now, Trey Lance is falling. He's falling in ADP, in best ball ADP, because people are concerned that it's going to be Garoppolo. But every other factor that actually matters, like the fact that they trade up to get him, the fact that he's entering year two, the fact that Garoppolo underwhelmed last year,
those are the reasons, shoulder surgery.
Yes.
You know, exactly. Still recovering.
Those are real reasons and things that are actually concrete to buy into that Trey Lance will be the starter, and not necessarily one report that said, oh, Lance is, you know, struggling at OTAs where none of us are there. And we're like, okay, we're just going to take this guy at face value and just assume that he's right based on the 49ers track record of these beat reports. Like, no, no thanks. So for me, I think that Trey Lance is definitely, I mean, he's someone that we thought was like, he was going in ADP, like as a top six quarterback. Like it's clear, like who has the fantasy upside, but I do like Lawrence to an extent. I think that he can take, I don't view him in the similar tier as like Zach Wilson or those types of players. I think that he's a tier above that because I think that he's just a better quarterback and his situation has obviously improved dramatically since last year.
Yeah, I've got Lawrence at 19 and Lance at 17. And in between those guys, I've got Deshaun. So that's like where I have those guys ranked. So interesting on these. Let's go to running backs here. And the first one hurts me because I had to lower him more. I have been the Saquon truther forever, but he is no longer, he just can't be an RB1 on draft boards right now. You know, there's at least 12 guys. I've got him at 14, so I have 13 guys ahead of him just in terms of what I think is going to happen this year. But his ECR is kind of big. It's between 10, which makes you a bottom end RB1, and 18, which makes you a lower end RB2. So where are you at on Saquon? Is he like a high-end RB2, a low-end RB1, a low-end RB2? Where do you see him?
So I got him in the mid-RB2 range. So I believe I would have him at 15 or 16. So pretty close to where you have him ranked. So not in my top 12. But I understand the upside with Barkley. And I was surprised that they didn't add another running back in the draft. Like that was
me
something
too.
That kind of was
kind of makes me think
out.
About Wandale maybe potentially getting some run as a backup. You know, yeah. I because he played that at Nebraska, he came in as a running back. So switched over to wide receiver a little bit later, obviously played a lot of wide out at Kentucky this last season. But yeah, I mean, this is totally off of a different trail here, but it makes me think of Wandale potentially doing that because they interviewed every running back. You know, we go through those camp visits. They visited all those running backs and then didn't draft a single one of them. So I'm with you, but yeah, Saquon kind of in the middle there.
Yeah. Saquon in the middle there. I mean, he has the pedigree in terms of he's been an RB1 before. He's been a top two running back before. Again, that was when he was really involved in the passing game. And that's, again, I think that's still in his range of outcomes. But now that you mentioned, you know, Wandale, you know, Wandale, someone that they could use really close to the line of scrimmage. They use Kadarius Toney in that type of element last year as well. So there are a lot of question marks about this Giants offense and how it's going to operate. You know, Brian Daboll, again, he was like the anti-using running back in Buffalo for so many years. Like he just like never used running backs until, you know, Devin Singletary was unleashed like down the stretch. So, like that's like what you're hoping for. I think that Barkley is going to get all the running back snaps. I don't think that they're going to use any other running back. I mean, Daboll, again, they signed Matt Breida, who was with Buffalo, right, who Brian Daboll didn't use ever. So, so Barkley is going to be the RB1 there. It's just kind of how are the touches distributed? And that's why I have Saquon, I think, well ahead of the next guy we're going to talk about.
Yeah. And the next guy is J.K. Dobbins. And this hurts me even more because, I mean, pre-draft, I wrote an article about, just guys that I think that can be bought low pre-draft. And I said, well, I think J.K. Dobbins can, because I think the expectation is J.K. Dobbins going off the injury, Gus Edwards coming off the injury, Justice Hill didn't work out. Maybe they'll go out and draft a running back. I said, I don't think they're going to, because I think if that was the case, then, you know, they would have done it beforehand. There are plenty of running backs on the market. They could have got anyone. Well, they did draft Tyler Beatty, which doesn't affect anything for either one of those guys, Dobbins and Edwards. But then they signed Mike Davis. So now my thought process is not, it's not that, okay, these guys are huge impacts on J.K. Dobbins. I don't think that at all. But I do think that they are looking for a guy to catch the ball out of the backfield. I think that's why you draft Beatty. That's why you sign Mike Davis. You let those guys battle it out. Now you have your third and long running back, and it's not going to be Dobbins. It's not going to be Gus Edwards. This team still runs more than any other team. Last season, they were only third after being first in 2020 and 2019, but they were also had to play point for point because they had no secondary last year. They had the vending machine guy coming in and playing in the secondary last year. They were all hurt. So, you know, they had to go a little more point for point. So they were passing, and it wasn't even Lamar passing that much because he was hurt. So Tyler Huntley got some of these games. So I'm still high on Dobbins. I'm higher than anybody else in ECR. I am at 17 because I just think he's going to score touchdowns when they get down there, but his range is 18 to 27. So is he still an RB2, just a later one for you, or is he an RB3 for you?
Yeah, I got him in the back end of the RB2 range, and I'm concerned, again, the lack of passing, lack of receiving work, and I wasn't really thinking about Beatty and Mike Davis, honestly. I'm glad that you brought those guys up. Just the fact that Dobbins in this offense just really doesn't ever involve, you know, passing the ball to the running backs, because it's like,
and they're going to have to this year. Yeah. Losing Marquise. And Marquise wasn't like such a big piece, but he stretched the field. Right. So they're going to have to do something different to make that, to open up everything. And I think passing the running back is going to have to be something.
And I do think that you're spot on with the how Dobbins hits is touchdowns. Like that's what he, when he was healthy, the last time we saw him healthy, it was the touchdowns. Like, his touchdown rate was really high. And again, he's a good player and he plays in a good offense. So it's not to say that that's unsustainable, but even going back to that Mark Ingram season, I think 2019, Mark Ingram was an RB1 because he scored a bunch of touchdowns, and I think he scored, like, on his, like, limited receptions too. He, like, scored like 4 touchdowns. So that's what you're kind of hoping with Dobbins, is that he does find pay dirt a lot. And I guess I'm just less bullish on him doing that because they have Gus Edwards and they've used Gus Edwards also, like, at in the red zone a little bit as well. Again, the extent of the injuries, I really don't know. I mean, both of them are on the roster and both of them, I'm assuming, are healthy. Will they come back as explosive? That's a question mark. But again, when we're comparing it to Saquon, who again has also been dealing with some injury history of his own, I do understand. I think Dobbins, I don't think he should be outside, you know, your top 24. I think that he should definitely be, because it's good offense too. It's like, you're not drafting running back on a horrible offense that's never going to find the end zone. He's going to score touchdowns at some point. And up to this point, we have only seen Dobbins be uber efficient, which I don't think is going to change, especially with Lamar Jackson, a quarterback, the linebackers have to freeze. You're always going to see guys in these types of offenses. It's 5 yards per carry. Like, that's what it's always going to be.
And that's why they run so much, because it's five yards per carry. So, and Lamar runs so much. But that is eventually, and I think probably starting this year or next year, it's going to have to start being ratcheted back. And you would assume this year, because Lamar was hurt last season. Quick debates here. Eckler versus Najee. Who you got?
Eckler versus not
PPR.
For me, yeah. So for PPR, it's definitely going to be Austin Eckler for me. I just gravitate towards the receptions. I gravitate towards the better offense, just offense environment. I mean, I love the Chargers, and I honestly don't care where they go in ADP. I just want to draft them because I know that Justin Herbert is the engine, and I just want to be on that train. So whoever he is driving along with him, which I want pieces of, and I don't think Najee Harris is ever going to catch as many passes as he did last year ever again. Like, unless he gets another Ben Roethlisberger type quarterback who just is so willing to check the ball down to. I don't even think Pickett, you know, Pickett's more mobile. Trubisky's more mobile than Roethlisberger. So for me, it's going to be Austin Eckler still.
Well, hopefully it's touchdowns that he gets, because last year he had 10, which is nice, but Damian Harris had 15, and all he does is run the ball straight. So let's get Najee in there a couple times. Javonte Williams versus DeAndre Swift.
I'm going to go with DeAndre Swift. I think I'm leaning again towards the pass catching, towards the fact that the Lions unleashed DeAndre Swift down the stretch last year. And Jamal Williams, when he had the chance to be the guy when Swift got hurt, you know, he was horrible. Like, he didn't do anything. He didn't stand out. So he doesn't really give the Lions any reason to, we need to feature Jamal Williams more.
So bullish on Jamal too, because Anthony Lynn talked him up so much in the offseason. I was like, he's going to have a role. Anthony Lynn's in love with him. He just already said they're 1A, 1B, and that did not happen. So,
yeah. So I think that Swift, the way that he wins, obviously being used in the passing game, so whether the Lions are winning or losing, it doesn't really matter what the game script is. And I do have more concerns about Javonte Williams, not even the fact because Melvin Gordon is coming back, but how much Javonte Williams will see a role in the passing game. You know, I've pointed out as a, you know, I guess I'm like a Kenneth, I guess I'm low on Kenneth Walker versus consensus about how I don't think he's going to catch a lot of passes, pointing out, you know, how the Seattle's offense has not really featured running back targets. Part of that has to do with Russell Wilson, but part of it also has to do with the offensive philosophy. But with Wilson coming over to Denver, I think there is concerns about how many targets will Javonte Williams get, with Melvin Gordon also operating in some type of, you know, complementary role. I think that Williams has top tier upside. Again, if Melvin Gordon were to get injured, I would lean towards Williams. But in this case, I mean, Swift, I really don't think the drop off is so large between the two guys that I would probably go with Swift, just because he's done it a little bit more before. I mean, before he got hurt, you know, he was RB9. and right. half point scoring. So he's already been a top 10 running back. I don't need to be, oh, can he do it again? If anything, we could see more from DeAndre Swift, because I think the Lions think they can compete. Like, I really think that Dan
they might be able to compete too. Like, especially I don't think it's that crazy.
That division has major question marks. The Packers have never looked more susceptible. The Vikings are, we don't really know. They're a wild card. Their defense has been horrible the last couple of years. They have Kirk. How far can that get them? And look, Jared Goff, say what you want, but the guy has played in Super Bowl and he's shown that he can at least sustain an offense and fantasy weapons, which you cannot say about every quarterback. So
very true. Yeah. I have Javonte just slightly ahead. I'm a little worried about DeAndre Swift breaking down. He's just so undersized. But I love the role that they have him in, and I have them right next to each other, and they're both RB1s for me. But I also think that Melvin Gordon taking so long to re-sign with Denver told me two things. Number one, Denver didn't care if he signed somewhere else, because he could have. He had opportunity too. And number two is that the rest of the league, no one clamored to go sign Melvin Gordon. So he's just not that desirable anymore. So I do think Javonte takes a step up, but I'm also, I have concerns about Javonte too. For poking holes, it's guys never carried the load by himself. He didn't in North Carolina. He didn't in Denver. So giving him a full run may not be the best thing, but there's plenty of guys that don't get a full run and have been successful. Alvin Kamara being the poster boy for that. But how about Breece Hall versus Travis Etienne?
Earlier in the season, I would have definitely said Etienne. I think I was really bullish on Etienne, like from the get-go, just kind of citing the relationship with Trevor Lawrence, the fact that James Robinson is coming off the Achilles injury. It looked like, you know, wheels up for Etienne. Then I kind of like
he wasn't poisoned by Urban Meyer last year. Yes. He didn't have to play for him. So that's good.
He didn't have to play. But again, as I kind of like took a reset, kind of like let things kind of soak in a little bit, I was considering more about how they deploy this backfield. You have Doug Peterson there, who has kind of been known to use more of a stable of running backs. You know, when is James Robinson going to come back? It seems like he is on a good schedule right now. So for me, I think Breece Hall is more defined in my mind. I think getting the capital that he did from the current coaching staff, you know, it's not a new coaching staff or anything with the New York Jets. Like, they are committed to Breece Hall. I'm more certain that he's going to be the bell cow back for the Jets than I am that Travis Etienne is going to be the bell cow back for the Jacksonville Jaguars, especially because when James Robinson eventually does come back, like, he is a body that they probably will end up using at some point. Where the Jets, look, Michael Carter was a fourth round pick. Like, they don't need to use him at all if they don't want to. And then if Breece Hall gets hurt, okay, then we use Michael Carter. But they don't need, there was nothing about Carter's season last year that convinced the Jets enough to not draft Breece Hall at the top of the second round. I mean, people forget Michael Carter wasn't taking over the Jets backfield until like Tevin Coleman got hurt. Like, Tevin Coleman was keeping Michael Carter off the field in a committee. Breece Hall is not, they're not even the same stratosphere with Breece Hall versus Tevin Coleman. So if Tevin Coleman was able to supplant Michael Carter's snaps to an extent, I would assume that Breece Hall is going to be doing that tenfold.
Yeah. And we're lockstep there, because I've got Breece Hall way ahead of Etienne, but I do think Etienne, if I'm remembering correctly, in ECR is slightly ahead of Hall. I think a lot of people just haven't put rookies in for as far
slackers.
As ECR goes. Yeah. They got to get on it. Well, I'm one of those slackers. So we got to get on it. So we'll do it for sure here. Kenneth Walker versus Melvin Gordon. I know we just both kind of talked down Melvin Gordon, but you also kind of talked down Kenneth Walker. I feel like I'm high man on Kenneth Walker, mainly because I have no respect for Drew Lock at all whatsoever. And I think you go out and you get a guy like Kenneth Walker, if you're Seattle, and you say, you know, we're going to pair him with Penny. We're going to run the ball a lot. We're going to play time of possession. We're going to have Drew Lock throw as few passes as possible, because we don't want him throwing, or Baker Mayfield, whoever it is, doesn't really matter. You know, you want to throw the ball less because you don't have Russell. They're not letting anybody cook this year. It is microwave running back. That's what we're doing every single meal here if you're Seattle. So I think Walker's going to get a big run here, but in ECR, they're fairly close. Who are you going between the rookie and Gordon?
I'm taking the younger back, just with more explosive upside. He should get volume towards the, maybe from the get-go, we're going to see. I kind of think about this, and like, who do I want during the playoff run? It's going to be Kenneth Walker. Like, there's no way Melvin Gordon is going to be hitting his stride in December. That would be Kenneth Walker. You know, Rashad Penny's been on IR for a couple of weeks. Kenneth Walker, they're just feeding him because they have no other reason to just lose games. Like, let's just run the ball. We're down by 40. Who cares? Give it to Kenneth Walker more. So I will go with Kenneth Walker there.
I'm just want to look it up real quick. Walker for ECR is 33. Gordon is 34. So they are absolutely right next to each other in ECR, and you and I don't see that as it should not be that close. Let's jump over to wide receivers. The first couple player debates are tough ones for me. One I did just for you. But the first one here, Pittman versus DK Metcalf. This one is tough. Because Metcalf has proven to be a great wide receiver, but obviously this is a tough, you know, whoever the quarterback is there is going to be tough. A guy had 130 targets last year. He had 12 touchdowns. I do not think he's going to come anywhere in the neighborhood. Pittman goes on the reverse. He gets the better quarterback. He goes from Carson Wentz to Matt Ryan. Obviously a much bigger step. They didn't go out and draft anyone amazing. Alec Pierce is good, but I wouldn't say he's coming in here and challenging Michael Pittman. They still haven't, we still don't know what's going on with T.Y. Hilton there. So it looks like Pittman is your number one wideout in Indy by a wide margin, and he has a better QB. So I'm going with Pittman. Who are you going? Are you going with Pittman too, or is DK Metcalf just too good to be ignored?
No, I'm going with Michael Pittman as well. This was something I learned just last year, drafting too much DJ Moore, too much Terry McLaurin, you know, putting these guys on a pedestal to be like, nah, they're so good, they're going to rise above the circumstances. And that's not the game to play with fantasy. Like, yeah. You don't want to look at a player and be like, if the first thing that comes to your mind when you're like kind of looking at the situation, be like, oh, he'll be fine. It's like, no, I don't want guys that are going to be fine. I want guys that are going to go to the freaking moon. And that's Michael Pittman. So, yes, Michael Pittman over DK Metcalf. I'm not watching Drew Lock, Geno Smith, even Baker Mayfield throw balls to DK Metcalf. It's not happening. I'm going with Michael Pittman.
How about Cortland Sutton versus Juju Smith-Schuster? Obviously, both take a huge step up in quarterbacks. Cortland gets, Cortland gets Russell Wilson, a Hall of Famer, and Juju goes from the corpse of Ben Roethlisberger and being hurt to Patrick Mahomes and playing, you know, with Travis Kelce, so not being your number one option either. So, we thought maybe there was going to be a suspension yesterday for Jerry Jeudy. Doesn't look like there will be anything for him. That looks like it was a miscommunication yesterday. So, or just dramatic something, but he seems to be fine. But what do you think of Juju versus Cortland? Cause I know you have been the Cortland quote guy of the offseason here.
Yes, so this one is going to be Cortland Sutton for me. I just love the upside with him attached to Russell Wilson, who, I mean, we just talked about it. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, over the past two seasons have basically been top 12 wide receivers, and it's because the way that Russell Wilson connects with these guys downfield. If you look at Seattle wide receiver, a Seattle wide receiver has finished top five in red zone targets for three straight seasons. Like, Cortland Sutton is the red zone guy for the Denver Broncos, whether Jerry Jeudy's there or not. So I think that Sutton has easy double-digit touchdown upside, and that just makes him an easy guy for me to pick over someone like Juju, who I did more kind of like I wrote up Juju's dynasty profile for Fantasy Pros and just kind of like taking a path down. Now, we obviously saw his huge, massive sophomore year where he had over 1,400 receiving yards. He's only 25 years old. So I understand the allure with Juju, but my main takeaway from just kind of going back and looking at his career was he's still never been the guy. Like, he has never shown that I can be the guy in an offense. And ultimately, I think that hinders his ceiling to, like, being a wide receiver, too, in fantasy, even with Patrick Mahomes, who, if you look at Patrick Mahomes, like, who has he helped out in fantasy besides Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce? Like, not really much. Like, you've had to be an elite talent with Mahomes to put up elite production. And I'm not so sure Smith-Schuster is that after he's always thrived playing alongside other elite playmakers. So, for me, I think Sutton profiles more as a actual fantasy wide receiver one. So that's why I lean towards him over Juju.
So I was the Cortland Sutton guy when he came out of SMU. And I said, look, this guy is getting better. He played safety for his first 2 years in college, flipped over to wide receiver. So he was new to the position, but improved 2 years in a row. Rookie year was great. Obviously tore up his ACL. That was against the Steelers. I was watching that game live when it happened. It came back, looked okay last year, but it's Drew Lock, right? So I am huge on Cortland Sutton this year. I am also the Juju guy. there's two things here. Number one, Juju will always I will always love him for laying out Vontaze Perfect, right? I know that's a dumb reason in terms
of
fantasy.
That's a great reason. No, it was great.
Doesn't matter to me. Vontaze Perfect, complete POS. Don't care what happens to him. Loved it when Juju laid him out. Totally worth standing over him for the penalty. Have a shirt with that on it. I'm going to get a poster with it. Like, everything. I love Juju. So I am definitely a homer here when it comes to him. But he doesn't have to be the guy in Kansas City. Travis Kelce's still the guy in Kansas City. So he is going to be number two. Sky Moore is going to come in this offense as well. Mecole Hardman took a big step. There are many options. I don't think he has to come in and be the number one. I also think he can. Let's not forget, it was big year. Then it was blowout UCL for Roethlisberger. So you have Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges. And then he got hurt, and it was the corpse of Ben Roethlisberger anyway. So I watched him play every single game that huge year. And he makes plays by himself. AB is great. It's awesome to have him next to him. I think they're both good. I have Juju slightly ahead of Sutton, but I like both of them a lot. But I knew you were the Sutton guy. I'm the Juju guy, so I had to bring that one here. So we will see. Big ranges for these guys. And anyone you want to talk, we don't have to talk about all of them, but I just want to mention these. Chris Godwin is 7-41. Michael Thomas is 13-42. DeAndre Hopkins, because his suspension, is 12-53. That's just someone needs to update. Gabe Davis is 25-64. Michael Gallup is 34-74. And Rondale Moore is 44-85. These are the ECRs. These are PPR rankings. But someone has a guy ranked this high and this low for all of these players. Is there one that stands out to you that you are on the higher or lower end, or are you kind of in the middle of all of these guys? What do you think of this group?
Yeah, it seems like they're all like placeholder rankings because we're like waiting for news on, because most of these guys are hurt, or, you know, have injuries, yeah. And you're just kind of waiting like, okay, are they going to come back? So Godwin, I think if he was healthy, he would be in my top 12. Like, there's no doubt about that in my mind with Brady. You know, his timetable, you know, looking, this is from Edwin Porras from Fantasy Points. So he kind of tweeted out basically a graph or a chart of the injured guys, and based on when they had sustained their injuries, what the actual expectation of when they would return was. And Chris Godwin is mid-September, so potential PUP candidate. Does he miss 6 weeks? Maybe not. Maybe he only misses a couple weeks. And that's, you know, someone that I still want to be above, you know, ECR on, above ADP on, with Chris Godwin. Michael Thomas, I mean, when we saw him healthy in 2020, he was elite. And in 2019, he was obviously elite too. And I get why someone has him ranked at 13, and I get why someone has ranked him at 42. so you're
understandable.
Kinda, yeah, right. Yeah, like, yeah. So it's really hard to, you know, pound your fist on the table for Michael Thomas when you and I both don't know like what the state of his ankle is. You know, our latest,
I mean, I got him at 26. I mean, yeah. Cause that's like, I can't put him as a wide receiver too, cause I haven't seen him in a year and a half. So, you know, can't do it.
With Hopkins, I mean, Hopkins, I'm definitely low. I'm definitely want to be on the lower side for him. Yeah. I just don't want players, and this is even from, not even from like a player standpoint, but from a roster construction, like holding Hopkins for 6 weeks and then praying that he comes back and becomes an elite alpha wide receiver after a PED suspension. It just, like, you have to wait so long for him to come back. And then when he comes back, okay, how good is he going to be? Like, last year, he wasn't that target hog that we've all come to know and love of DeAndre Hopkins. Like, they were spreading the ball out much more. If Marquise Brown and Kyler Murray are humming, you know, why would putting him back in the offense, and then Cliff Kingsbury is going to be like, all right, well, now we got to get Hopkins, you know, 12, 14 targets a game, when Kyler Murray and Marquise Brown are just like on another level, like attacking the ball downfield. So
I'll tie for the low rank on Hopkins too, because I'm with you. If I've got him at 53 right now, and I haven't uploaded mine to Fantasy Pros yet. So somebody else has him at 53 also, but like you said, you can't draft him as a top four wide receiver because you need three, and you need an injury replacement at least. So, you know, so I can't put him in my top 48. That's my thought process. So if I take him, he's a wide receiver 5, and you have to sit on him. So he has to come at a deal. No, someone is going to take him higher than that in every draft. So exactly. I will probably have 0 shares of Hopkins. It hurts me because Hopkins is that guy. We were mentioning Terry McLaurin, DJ Moore. These guys playing with back. This guy played with TJ Yates and was awesome, you know? So this guy can do it, but he's older. Like you said, I think a lot of last year, I think the skill is going to be back when he gets back. Because I think last year he was playing hurt, which is why, you know, he went on injured reserve and why he got popped for the steroids, because he was trying to work his way back to what he was. So I do think he's going to be good when he comes back, but What does that mean? Does that mean he's still elite, or does that mean he's still getting a lot of targets? Because they're different, you know? So I probably won't have him rostered anywhere. That's where I'm at. Anybody else on this list that, you know, perks your ears up here?
Gabriel Davis is interesting because I think that he profiles as like, he's like the guy that people love to hate. Like right now, he's like the poster boy of like, I'm lower on Gabriel Davis than everybody else. He's going to get out targeted by Jameson Crowder. And I mean, yeah, I could see a scenario where that ends up happening. But for me, I lean on the side of I'm chasing the upside with Gabriel Davis. I'm chasing the guy who scored like 50 fantasy points against the Kansas City Chiefs the last time we saw him take the field. Why are we afraid to buy into a big bodied wide receiver who ranks top five in the NFL in end zone targets, despite not even playing a full role over the past 2 years attached to Josh Allen? So for me, it seems like you either want to be all out on Gabriel Davis or all in, and I'm leaning towards going all in on Gabriel Davis. And if he gets out targeted by Jameson Crowder, then okay, you know, sorry, I was wrong, but I'm willing to bet on the offense. I find that when I just bet on better offenses and better situations with some of these receivers, especially because like when you go to like the receiver three tier, like you can make arguments for like all of them. Like you could say the wide receiver 48 is the same as the wide receiver 30. So right. With Gabriel Davis, the thing that makes him unique is he's a big red zone receiver. They didn't add anyone of his similar build in the draft. They drafted Shakir, who is a slot receiver. So right. Gabriel Davis, to me, it's like, all right, I'm going to buy. Sorry. I like my guy attached to Josh Allen, who is a cannon arm. Like, sue me.
I'm in the middle here too. I have him as a wide receiver 4 still. So I don't have him inside my top 36, but I can absolutely see myself moving higher on him, especially if we start getting good reports. It's just wide receivers are cheap this year, man.
Yeah.
Like the reason I have him at 43, I have Garrett Wilson ahead of him. I have Devontae Smith slightly ahead of him. Hunter Renfrow is good and has a, you know, great wide receiver playing next to him. So he could get even better. He could become even better. So, you know, it's for me, it's more, I like the guys above him too, but I also still do like Gabriel Davis. I feel like I was a Gabriel Davis guy for a while last season, telling everyone, pick him up. He's going to do something. He finally did it. Just, you know, in the playoffs when he had his 4 touchdowns, whatever, against KC. Let's go to the rookies here. Because I'm just higher overall on every single rookie in this class than ECR. And I know a lot of ECR will move around because a lot of these guys had them ranked low because they didn't have landing spots, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. They'll all move up, but I'm just much higher on all these guys right now. I mean, Treylon Burks is at 43, so he's a wide receiver 4 on most people's list. Drake London, wide receiver 48, the last wide receiver 4 on most lists. Garrett Wilson is at 50. Olave's at 55. Sky Moore's at 61. Watson's at 64. Jameson Williams, who might be on the pup, is at 69, ahead of Dotson and Pickens at 70 and 80. I'm higher on every single rookie wide receiver. I think you probably are too. Are there any that stand out to you as, you know, either I'm going to put some of these top end guys in the top 3. I'm going to put some of these lower end guys as dart throws at the end of my draft. Who do you like among this rookie group for redraft for this season?
Yeah, I agree that they're all being undervalued. And that just kind of goes back from, if you just look at the numbers, like basically I looked back since 2013, basically looking at like hit rates of some of these rookie wide receivers and found that round 2 or higher rookie wide receivers combined for a wide receiver 3 season, so top 36 at a 55% clip rate. So if you take the 13 receivers combined that were drafted in rounds 1 and round 2, you take 6 or 7 of them. So you take all the guys that went in the first round, except you can remove Jameson Williams because we assume that he's going to miss the start of the season. So he may not finish top 36 just because he doesn't play enough games. And then you add in one guy from round 2, whether it's Watson, whether it's Sky Moore, like you should have 6 or 7 rookie receivers that fit this criteria in your top 36. Like that's the historical hit rate, 55%. So that's where I feel if anytime they are not ranked there in ADP in top 36, they're values, in my opinion. So you should be taking all the first round rookie receivers if their ADP is 40, 50. So I think that they should be all around that top 36 range. Now you can move around a little bit, you know, 40 or whatever, but in your mind, I think everyone should view rookie receivers, especially with the draft capital, like wide receiver 3 is really like where you should feel good about taking them. And the fact that you probably don't ever have to pay that price And then you get more, even more upside with these guys because we know the talent of them. Like, you want to draft receivers that leap. You know, you're not going to see a rookie receiver, you know, slowly make his way up the board. It's either going to be he's either going to, like, smash, basically, is kind of what we've seen, or just kind of fade into irrelevance. And then, you know, you just get rid of him. So I think that, yeah, the receivers are way too low. And honestly, there really isn't one that I'm specifically gravitating towards because I see paths where all of them could really be super productive. And it's really like, okay, where does the board land for me? Oh, okay, Olave, he's the cheapest. All right, fine, I'll take him. Oh, nobody wants Treylon Burks. Oh, cool, I'll take him too. I thought that the tier of the receivers was interesting this year. I think Sky Moore is probably the one that's most undervalued, in my opinion. The fact that he was a second round pick and he was the 13th receiver off the board. But I mean, again, like you had mentioned with Mahomes and Juju, Patrick Mahomes is his quarterback. And I like Moore's fit a little bit more than, no pun intended, in Kansas City than Christian Watson's with Aaron Rodgers. I have some reservations. I know we talked at the beginning of the show, if they add a free agent, you know, if they add a Jarvis Landry type player, I could see him, you know, Rodgers like trusting Landry like so much where Watson really just is like MVS again. And that's going to have like spike weeks, but really more of a better and best ball type of player, not necessarily someone you can trust consistently. Okay, good matchup against the Vikings, start Christian Watson. Other than that, like you got to stay away from him. I will say with George Pickens, so he's the guy that's ranked last tier. He is someone that I think that I really want to be overweight on. The talent, I think, is not debatable. I mean, what he did in as a true freshman, basically being one of the best wide receivers in the SEC, you know, his numbers were Justin Jefferson-esque.
Yeah.
And it's like, who are these guys breaking out all over these really early age producers that played in the SEC? Like Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase. Like, that's what all these guys have been doing. And that's what George Pickens did. Now, I know he's been hurt the last couple of years. He didn't play that much. But I look at the Steelers depth chart, and
he's already better than Claypool.
Yeah, like I the thing is, like, you know, Claypool's rookie year was obviously great. You know, he had the double digit touchdowns, and that's really rare for a player like that. But, you know, the one player, when you look back at rookies that have done that, and you're like, listen off all the rookies, it's all just stud after stud. And there's one guy that's not a stud, and it was Tampa Bay Buccaneers Mike Williams. And that's that's something to remember, because it's like, no, like, yes, the percentage chance of these players hitting is very high, but it's not automatic. And the way that Chase Claypool has kind of, you know, hit last year, I feel like he's falling more in that type of path where really good rookie season, then just kind of never was able to really capture that again. I look at it similar to the way that the Steelers had when they first drafted Juju. Juju was buried on the depth chart when he first ended up on the Steelers.
Yeah, I wasn't super happy when we drafted Juju. I was kind of like, I just don't know if we need
him. He was behind Martavis Bryant. And I can't help but think that with Claypool's kind of like antics of, you know, effort, and I want to listen to music, that Mike Tomlin's going to get pissed. And similar to how he kind of treated Martavis Bryant, where Martavis Bryant was, I want to be traded. And then he finally got benched for Juju, and then Juju obviously blew up. So I think that could honestly happen with George Pickens, and that's probably why I'm just going to draft a lot of George Pickens and probably stay away from Claypool this year. Like, that's kind of like my galaxy brain theory with this receiver core, because behind Deontay, there really is no one super established. Like, Claypool, everyone views as the two, but like you had mentioned, I mean, George Pickens might just be better. He probably is, actually.
He's already better, I think, just in skill. And let's not forget, like, you know, his RAS score in his times and all that stuff. Less than a year removed from a major knee reconstruction surgery. So, you know, the dude is unbelievably talented. It's between the ears, and he's already acting weird. And this whole locker room has been weird too. So I was like, oh man, this is a weird fit, you know, because I hope that, you know, Claypool doesn't feed into his, you know,
there are going to be so many training camp fights between Claypool and George Pickens.
I mean, it's probably going to be between both those guys and the defensive backs. You know, I'm just glad Mike Mitchell's not on this team, because that would be a fist fight every single day in practice. So that dude was an absolute headhunter. Let's end out with a couple tight ends. And I just have a couple tight ends with big ranges here, because the rookie class is bad. I mean, I love Trey McBride, but landing in Arizona, you couldn't pick a worse spot for him, because he's behind Ertz. He'll get used, of course. But you're behind Ertz, and this offense doesn't typically use a tight end all the time, so he's going to play wide out anyway. So just strange, you know, so there's nothing really to go with there. But three guys stood out to me as having just enormous ranges in terms of ECR. Zach Ertz is between 7 and 18, so I think maybe some people are fearing the Reaper for him with Trey McBride. Dawson Knox was 8 to 24, so a number one tight end, to a barely a number two tight end. I'm assuming whoever thinks probably about touchdown regression because he had 9 last season. And Njoku between 9 and 34 here. So these three all have gigantic ranges. Where are you at on these three tight ends? Ertz, Knox, and Njoku.
Definitely on the higher end for Zach Ertz. I'm not really concerned about Trey McBride. Ertz was tight end 4 over the last, I don't remember how many, when Hopkins was out, basically. You know, Zach Ertz was the tight end 4, 7 receptions per game, 24% target share, and Hopkins is going to miss the first 6 weeks of the season. So if I'm playing from a redraft perspective, Zach Ertz is going to be at his healthiest at the start of the season, and that's when he has his most opportunity for targets. So I will draft him and play him and deal with the repercussions of my actions when he's hurt later on. But for now, I will draft Zach Ertz a little bit higher than ECR. Dawson Knox, you hit on the touchdown regression. I think that that is in play here. He had a super low target rate per route run. So there are a lot of red flags on his profile about sustaining his production from last year. So I don't really draft a lot of tight ends that go in his range, like in the middling range, because I find that tight ends drafted between 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 basically put up similar production to tight ends going in 18, 19, 20, 21. Sure. So if Knox falls to me, I'm fine with taking him. You know, if people are afraid, you know, they added OJ Howard. Oh no, like there's going to be two tight ends, which I don't really think is going to be the case. He's still a tight end in a high powered offense. He's not going to command a huge target share, but I'm not going to say no to, again, another Josh Allen attached asset because people are afraid that the targets aren't going to work out perfectly in their favor.
Sometimes, I still have him as a tight end 1.
Yeah. Knox. So sometimes betting, that's why I have him ranked as well, just because I'm betting on, you know, Josh Allen. And if you've been betting on Josh Allen, like you'd be sitting very, very pretty right now. So I'm going to continue to do it. And Njoku, I mean, I love the talent with Njoku. He had a great season last year. He's super efficient.
He's fetch.
Yeah.
We keep trying to make him happen.
I know.
It's never going to happen, right? I mean, it's just so annoying.
Yeah. It's just the Harrison Bryant thing. It's really like if they make Njoku like the tight end that they want, the guy, then I could easily see him being a top 10 tight end. He's already done it before. He was a top 10 tight end earlier in his career with Baker Mayfield. You know, we should see him have an increased workload. There is no Austin Hooper, but I cannot just ignore the fact that Harrison Bryant is there. And if they just do 50% snap share and Njoku 50% snap share Harrison Bryant, then you're toast. So I can't be so over out of my skis on Njoku that I have to have him. But I realize the upside is there and that if he falls to me into good range, I will want to take a shot on him.
Is this the year? This is kind of my final question before we go here, because we talked about all these positions and just how deep the rookie class is and how deep adding those guys to the wide receiver pool makes wide receiver. Like you said, you know, 6 of these guys just in the history are going to finish in the top 3. I don't have any of them ranked inside the top 3 wide receivers, and I feel like I'm high on them, especially compared to these rankings. Does this say wide receivers are so cheap? This is the year. Go RB, RB, or tight end, RB, 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 tight end, RB, however it works. Take your first wide receiver in round 4. Because there's so many good ones, or is it like I'm still going to take those top end guys because the top end guys are scoring so much more points than the other ones? Where are you at in terms of top end draft strategy?
Still think it's going with the running backs. I really don't think that the strategy has really changed all that much. We have a couple. Look, I know there are just a few rare running back bell cows. Like there are not 12 of them. Like there really aren't. So if you get the chance, because there are people picking at the back end of the first round that will never get a running back that will have the same type of ceiling that running backs at the beginning of the first round. Now, there are a lot of players that you could argue maybe have some similar ceilings to some of the top tier receivers like Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase. It's not probable, but Cooper Kupp was a mid-range pick last year. Michael Thomas was a mid-range pick when he was, you know, the wide receiver 1. So the receivers, I'm looking for guys that take the leap. Like those are the guys you want to peg. You want to find them. You're like, this guy's going to take the leap. Where running backs, it's so easy to project that you're never going to find the value with that, because we know running back production is a product of volume. And we're pretty good at projecting volume on certain players year in, year out. Whereas receivers, it's based on efficiency. It's based on offense, which is more fluky and based on talent. It's and based on guys kind of showing up. So for me, it's still, you know, double tap running back and then just pound these receivers in the middle range, because this is where we see them make that leap. You know, the RB dead zone kind of works in correlation with I called it, you know, the RB dead zone. No, the wide receiver shred zone. That's what we're calling it.
You've been hanging out with Joe too much, making those puns right there. Oh, man. Well, look, I appreciate you making the time. This was awesome. Thanks for trying, you know, for helping me settle some of my internal brain debates when I'm making these. Can you do it for IDP too? I'm ranking IDPs right now. So, at @AndrewErickson_, tell everyone where they can find your stuff, all the podcasts you're doing, and all the great things.
Yep. So everything over again, my Twitter again, @AndrewErickson_, over on Fantasy Pros, you can find all my work. Also on TikTok, @AndrewErickson_, having fun with the kids on TikTok, making fantasy videos. It is a grand old time.
Yeah, that is awesome. Appreciate you making the time. Remember, follow me @BogmanSports. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/ITL Army, for group me rooms, rankings, all kinds of great stuff. We'll have more shows for you coming up here. So take it easy, everybody.